to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney, a podcast about getting local Kansas City artists on the couch to chat. Hello, 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 and welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
Hello.
I'm Corey.
I'm Courtney.
And today on the show, we have one of our super good friends, Kristen Alturo. Welcome to the show, Kristen.
Hello.
Hello. It is Sunday morning, and we recording this on a Sunday just because you have such a wonderfully fabulous schedule. So tell us what you're kind of doing right now and how our audience listeners might know you.
Okay, well, the reason why we're here on a Sunday is because I have a 9-to-5 schedule. So I work, I'm a branch coordinator at a bank in Lenexa.
Cool.
So I'm like the assistant manager there, but having a 9-to-5 is pretty inconvenient. When you want to do things like this, or even if you want to do normal things, like get a doctor's appointment or a dentist appointment, because they're all open at the same time. Like, who thought of that? Like, I always think of that, too, when I make a schedule.
I think we've sort of talked about that, let's call that week 4 on the show or something, about how there should be, like, banks and doctors and dentists and stuff that are almost open for people who have that crappy schedule.
Exactly.
And I mean that not just for actors. I'm talking about nurses and, you know, construction workers and people who really don't ever have the to take off work would be almost, like, not financially responsible at all.
Exactly.
But then how are you supposed to make sure that your teeth don't fall out of your head? Like,
it's
weird.
Yeah. I mean, but don't make my bank open later because I want to leave at 5. Mm-hmm. Other banks, fair. Yes, I agree. We should totally.
But not my bank. That's so funny. How long have you been at that bank?
I've been there since March. It's not my first time in banking, though. I worked at a bank in 2010 until, like, 2013. And then I ventured off into telemarketing and random odd jobs, and then I went back to it for 4 years, so I've been doing banking for a long time.
Is it easy to you, or is that just something that was super easy, or kind of, like, schedule-wise fun to slide into?
It's a both. I love problem solving, and I love numbers, so I put them both together, so it's kind of fun for me.
Mm-hmm.
But...
And you can also sing your ass off, too.
Schedule.
You can. Because that's what you do at night.
That is what I do at night. Actually, funny story. In 2010, there was an article written about me in, I forgot what newspaper, but it was like, she's a money manager by day, and at night, she takes the streets. And I was like, okay, first of all, why don't you make it not sound like I'm a prostitute?
But you
but
are.
But if I were, you know.
I would look
okay.
Good. Yeah.
Okay. But.
Your body, your choice. You can
exactly. But yeah, I perform at night. Not every night.
What are you performing in right now?
Nothing at the moment. I start rehearsals in 2 weeks for Hair.
Cool.
And they just released the location for that, and I've been so scatterbrained that I just forgot it right now. Sorry, Nick Padgett.
Is it not at
it's at the Black Box.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes.
They just, like, released it to us this week because originally the idea was going to be it was going to be a secret location, and then you find out the day of the night you're going, and then you just show up. But since so many people were curious and wanted to know, we were like, you know what, just here.
Yeah.
How many shows have you done with Pageant?
Let's see. I think, honestly, just 3, but it feels like so many in the best way possible. I really love working with Nick. It's... my biggest thing when I work in shows, I want to feel like I'm a part of a family, and I want to feel like everyone's sincere and there for each other. And that's really what I've felt since I started working with Nick in 2017 when I did Rocky with him the first time. And then since then I did Rocky again and Mamma Mia this past year, and now I'm going to do Hair and Rocky again. So,
Mamma Mia was so fun.
Oh my gosh.
I had one of the best nights ever that night.
Yeah, but
it was
also,
so fun.
I had such a fun time during the show, and, like, the cast was amazing. Katie Gilchrist is...
She's a star.
She's actually Jesus, I think. But the thing about, like, Mamma Mia, it was like, I really don't like this show. But all of a sudden, at the end of it, I was like, oh my God. I really love this show.
Well, the music is so fun.
It's so much fun.
It's a throwaway show.
Right, the plot is not what people come there
for. It's pizza. Like, even bad Mamma Mia is good.
Yeah, we just have fun.
I kind of feel that way about Rocky, too. Even bad Rocky
is
good.
Rocky is a terrible script.
Terrible script.
It's the most fun show to do.
I think last year was the first time I paid attention to what Rocky was. And I was like,
this is garbage.
You typically do the Trixie track, right?
Yes. Yeah. I do science fiction in the beginning. Yeah. I disappear. I'm back at the end.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Every time that I've done that show, Trixie and Magenta have sort of been the same character.
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard of people doing that.
Yeah, but I like that Pageant spreads the wealth.
Yes.
And you got a solo in Mamma Mia too, right? Uh-huh. Did he throw you one in there
yeah.
too? Yeah.
What was that song? Super Trooper?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had my little Beyonce moment. Mm-hmm. It was funny because the day we did Blocking, he and Katie were like, all right, so this runway, this part, I just want you to just do whatever you want. And I was like, okay.
Okay.
If you insist.
Okay. I mean, I have no idea what to do. Then I spin. And I.
Right.
Here we go.
That's right.
So taking it back. So the first question really is always, how the hell did you get to the couch today? So how, from your perspective, did you get to where you're sitting today on this lovely Sunday?
Oh my gosh. Well, I've never met Courtney before. Mm-hmm. So, like, this is so
yeah, we get to
isn't that
actually,
so
like,
goofy?
In the room together. Yes. We've been in the same space a lot.
Yes.
I feel. I've never actually met.
Corey, I know you mostly by, like, association and, like, seeing each other in various events. And
isn't that super fun?
Yeah, and I think that there was just, like, maybe an event. I don't even know which it was, but we were probably just like, hey, I know of you. Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, be friends. And I don't know what made you want to ask me to be on the show, to be honest.
Well, I mean, you know, from my perspective, like, you obviously are a very loud and proud person on social media.
Me?
Yeah, you. You stand up for what you believe in. You obviously have your viewpoints that I certainly align with in many aspects. And you never seem to really be too scared of adversity, so I definitely appreciate a strong person who wants to talk about, you know, essentially, fuck the world, I'm going to do what I want.
You know, and it hasn't always been that way for me. I mean, I started in KC Theater when I was 19, with The Barn, actually. I did Rent with them. And, you know, for the first few years, I cared so much about what people were thinking of me. And, you know, if I said something wrong, I didn't want to offend people. I always walked on eggshells, and not because people made me feel that way, but because I was so involved with myself and my career and having that take off, and I wanted it to be so picture perfect, and I wanted to create this like Beyonce persona, and I was like, that means I can't have any cracks, that means I can't have any flaws, nothing can be wrong, I can't be super loud and outspoken. And I don't know what happened where I woke up and I was like, no, I'm done with that. Like, I'm done being quiet, I'm done not being myself. It's exhausting to try to be somebody else for everyone except for yourself. So I just kind of took the step and just figuring out who I was and who I am. I'm still doing that every day, and I'm being loud while doing it. It's like being strong and vulnerable at the same time.
Yeah, I learned that from Bree Patterson, you know, essentially that idea of it is okay to both be strong and
yes.
flawed.
Mm-hmm.
That one does not take away from
right.
the other. I dig that. I definitely remember you, you know, I think I probably really paid attention to you maybe in a Legally Blonde. Is that, were you around Legally Blonde? And then were you, or the Guy Gardner's, then you were probably in Spring Awakening as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was at the bar.
So that was an Eric Magnus show. So yeah, your face just sort of started showing up, and that voice you have is pretty good. I like to listen to that voice sing. It's crazy I've never gotten you on stage for one of my shows, but maybe I'll fix that.
Maybe.
Come and audition for me.
There was a time I was not auditioning for anything because I had vocal nodules, RIP, for a while, and I just spent like a year and a half. Nick, Rocky Horror in 2017 was the first show I did in like over a year, and I was so nervous to do it because I was like, no, my voice isn't the same anymore, like, I am not the performer that people are used to seeing anymore. And like, I was so like, I felt like I was a has-been of some sort. So I'm trying to get back out there now that my confidence and my voice is coming back. And auditioning for more things. I do want to come down here eventually.
Hey, yeah. Well, it's fun here. Mm-hmm. You know, we like to smile. We have bagels. We
That's
tell
right.
stories.
They fed me, everyone. They gave me a bagel with schmear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even, but it's that fat-free schmear, I think, or something. So
ooh,
the
they're watching my girlish figure.
No, feed them. We also, Kristen did not know that I had a love for tacos until she walked into
the office. Oh my god.
So she's and she genuinely was like, do you like tacos? And I was like, well, how many tacos are in this room today? Yeah. Hashtag taco about it wedding.
That's right. It was the theme for the wedding.
Yeah, he told me.
Yeah. So it's just always so funny. Where
that
I'm
beautiful
like,
font that I made.
Yeah, that beautiful font. It's just so funny because I feel like I put that out there so much that it is so funny to me when someone, like, doesn't. Because I think that is such an overused, like, explanation of me. You know, like, I seriously have, an emoji of a taco, I think, at the end of everything. Like, it's just one of those things. So I think that as introvert, I sort of make myself in thinking that all I am is a Disney-loving taco lover, is that there's people who don't even look at those
there's
two
so
things.
Much more depth.
I have so much more depth than just loving Disney and tacos. Yeah, but it's just, I dig both of
those are pretty key features, though.
I love to eat tacos in Disney World.
Right? Oh.
Wow.
What are the tacos like in
that's
Disney
like
World?
Emotion overload for
right?
you.
It's a lot. What is that
what
like?
What are the tacos like?
Full of flavor and huge.
And
like
huge.
Everything in Disney World.
And
is
they sing
huge.
To you.
And they
before
sing
you
to
eat
you.
Them.
They do. Do you know that?
The crowns.
Do you know that? They really do.
Shut up.
Oh, like the people?
Like the
are you at Epcot when this happens?
Yes, okay. This is at Epcot, and I mean this. Mariachi bands. Those are real. Like that's not culturally inappropriate to say, right? Mariachi band.
I don't think so.
That's
what they're called. That's what I think. So, 2019 people. I'm just trying to cover my bases.
Corey's like, Kristen is in the room. We need to make sure.
Mariachi. Anyway, they serenaded Matt and I for our anniversary, and then they just walk through the sort of courtyard and they sing to you while you're eating tacos in Disney.
All right, I thought you meant the taco itself.
That's honestly what I was talking about, like the tacos sprouting legs and hands.
No.
That was just because I smoked too much weed. Like, the weed is what made that taco sing to me. But
I was about to say, I was like,
you're like,
cool.
Yeah, she crossed her legs. She had to get caught.
I know, I was like,
yeah.
Hold
she
on.
Said,
this musical lettuce. Let's talk about
this.
This is really good.
Okay, alright. Well, I like it. People sing to you, not
people.
The tacos. That's fantastic.
Yeah. But now I think that Disney should figure out how to make a singing taco.
Well,
they're probably on their way.
Right.
I will be in Disneyland 1 week from today.
Yeah.
By the way.
Oh, you're lucky. Mm-hmm. I haven't gone to Disney in like years. Like since I was 13.
Do you want
to
go?
What
you doing in October?
Yeah, we will be in
That's
Disney.
When we go to Disney World, is in October. Mm-hmm. Or in January, when I go back to. Mm-hmm.
You go to Disney World a lot.
Yeah.
Try to.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I believe
I've
in that magic.
So I'm just.
Yeah,
going
I get
October.
To go with. Courtney's family in October for her 40th birthday.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I'm so big on people, like, keeping that part of them that's still a kid. Mm-hmm. Because I think people forget that kids are adults longer than their kids. And so they lose that bit of innocence and they are like, well, I'm an adult now. There's no part of me that should be a child. Meanwhile, my boyfriend and I are here collecting Pokemon cards.
Right,
right. I truthfully believe that you don't have to grow up, you just have to get older.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
age
shows up no matter what, but
exactly.
Not my state of mind. And I was actually just talking with my husband about this, about the fact that he was like, yeah, well, around like 14 or 15 for him, he was like, no, like Disney wasn't cool at all. And I was like, right, but I was the one literally wearing a Mickey Mouse t-shirt in high school because I was like, I don't give a fuck. What
mm-hmm.
you think about this? I get to go to Disney World.
Yes, you're
Screw
enjoying
you.
Yourself. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was, there's a picture of me, 17 years old, with a pink, shiny cape on
mm-hmm.
and a Mario t-shirt. And
yeah.
I am in school doing this.
So what's your biggest dorky thing that you do now?
Oh, God.
That the world sees as dorky, that I'm going to be like, yeah, that's simple. That's just another day.
It's
yeah.
funny. Christoph's probably listening like,
what's she going to reveal?
And I just realized he can't see my face, so I'll show him later. Right now, let's see. I don't know. I guess I would say the whole Pokemon thing. I never played Pokemon ever in my whole life. I knew about it. I knew of Pikachu. That's it.
Right.
Then, you know, I met Christoph Nevins.
Mm-hmm.
And that is his bread and butter. He's Ash Ketchum every Halloween. And he started introducing me to Pokemon, and I was like, oh my gosh, he's having a great time. Like, it's so beautiful to see somebody just excited about something so pure and innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got me a pack of cards one day, and I opened it, and I was like, oh my god, that was really fun. And so now I've got, like, 3 boxes of Pokemon cards, because... Right. And I secretly bought 3 packs yesterday. I'm really sorry, Christoph.
Well, luckily, he won't find out until Thursday.
That's right.
So
that's
you have until Thursday to hide those cards.
I have time. Time. Okay. Yeah. But I didn't open anything cool. But I would say that that's probably it. And people my age and older are like, give me that face that's like, okay, that's really nerdy. Or like, how old are you? I'm like... Okay, but also, it's really nice to take a step back sometimes and look at things through a kid's eyes, yeah. Or just to enjoy something for...
Just have fun.
Just to have fun, exactly.
I don't think you need that kind of negativity in your life. No! If you've got people giving you side eyes.
Exactly!
For that.
No. And you're like...
Eat a taco with your Mickey Mouse ears on, playing Pokemon. Just be you.
Bless. That would be the best life ever. But it's just like, with everything that's going on in the world, it's so nice to take a step back and like, look at things... The way kids do sometimes, like, everything is so clean and pure and innocent, and it makes you a lot happier when you just have that out-of-body moment for a moment.
I dig that. Yeah, you are definitely a person who, as I said earlier, is vocal about a lot of the adversities that take place in the world. You know, definitely recently, maybe with MTH, we had that, you know, conversation. You had a conversation about your relationship. You know, you've had definitely some really public conversations about what's going on in your life, and I appreciate that for a learning tool for other people to know that it's okay to talk about crazy shit, and that social media is actually your voice, you know? Yeah. So you get to sort of speak out about many of those things that are happening in your life, and people are turning to you to hear what you have to say. So what does that kind of feel like to know that there are people who are searching for your voice first?
It's a lot of pressure. So I had a really bad bout of anxiety about it. Because I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to let so many people down. And, you know, just as a human, when everything was going down with MTH, my phone was nonstop. Like, it was just blowing up from every, like, phone calls, messages, Facebook messages, everything. And I just, like, had this mental breakdown. I was like, I can't do it. It's exhausting. I'm tired. I don't want to do it. Then I went back to realize, like, what is the point of me doing it all? And, the part of it is that it's so much bigger than myself, and it's not just me looking out for generations to come, but it's also me speaking for the generations before me and my ancestors, and speaking on specifically that situation. But it's a lot of pressure, but it's a lot of good pressure. I always have felt like and I hope anyone who listens doesn't feel like I'm talking about myself arrogantly at all. I promise I'm not.
It's your hour.
But I have always felt like, you know, the things that I've been blessed with, the talent that I have, and the voice that I have is not meant for my personal gain, that it is to draw people into me, to share something bigger than myself, and to kind of make people aware and educate people on something, whatever that may be. I, like you said, I speak a lot about, like, relationship health, mental
body
health.
Body image. You
body
talk about
image.
Your body image.
Yes.
Yes.
And, obviously, you know, brown issues in America and, you know, just POC issues in the theater community. So.
What, charged you to start being so vocal? You know, like, in your head. Like, do you remember the time that you went from sort of not using your voice to, and then maybe, like, what that instance was? Was just kind of like a general feeling that one day you felt like you had to start speaking up?
I do know that I was in a relationship for a very long time, where I got comfortable and I knew I had a lot of friends. I was like gaining some ground in the theater community and we were in a relationship for 5 years and I was like, oh, I don't have anything to do now. Like everything's set from here. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. It's obviously working. But I also didn't know much about myself. I didn't figure myself out. And then I think it took that breakup, like that major breakup, to kind of get my gears turning about like, oh, now I have to spend time with myself and like think about what I like and what I want to do and how I can just be there for myself and validate myself. And it took also a lot of me realizing who to trust and who not to trust too. I mean, that's kind of like the harsh reality in your 20s, you know, it kind of sucks sometimes because you cut people off or your circle gets smaller and smaller. But it was like a series of things over like a course of 2 years where I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to start taking care of myself and like speaking up for myself. And also, especially as far as like race goes, I experienced a lot of racism, especially after Trump was elected. People felt more bold, I will say, with their word choices towards me. So then I was like, I don't like this feeling and I don't like being quiet about it either. And so I just started speaking up.
Courtney and I had a what I think was one of the cooler conversations we got to have in St. Louis, you know, in a hotel room. I was there judging Miss Gay Missouri. I get to do that every once in a while. It's really...
Well, it's so fun.
It's a lot of fun to judge that. I also judge Drag Race every Thursday at Hamry or Mary's. It's a lot.
Oh my God.
It's goofy fun. That's definitely a sector of my life. But we were there, and we were in a hotel room. I think it was after the first night, right?
I think so.
Night first, one.
Maybe second.
We were eating our weight in White Castle.
Oh, man.
Like, eating our
I love White Castle.
It was, yeah, we made an Uber take us to White Castle.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
I mean, yeah. It was.
And as long as the line wasn't long, the Uber driver would do it. Oh, but it worked out. It was delish. We had so much fucking food in that hotel.
Yes, we did.
So there was a conversation that was taking place between two of our other friends that were in that room. And it was essentially an Italian guy talking to a black guy. Mm-hmm. And talking about how the Italian guy was just like, but I just don't see, like, your racism against you. And necessarily, particularly in the pageant system, he didn't feel as if he was like, well, but you're actually rewarded, you know, for being this fierce, beautiful black woman, you know, when you adorn clothes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then conversation started talking about police brutality. And
I think it started with the Italian gentleman not understanding why there was the alphabet soup of the LGBTQI, you know, all of the things and why you have to identify all of those things and, you know, what. And we were trying to say, you know, the reality of the situation is trans women of color are the most, you know, vulnerable of our community, and being able to allow that to be addressed in different ways and whatever the hell you want to identify as, because what does it matter to you? You know, who cares?
Exist.
Exactly. Yeah. Just decide, and it doesn't matter, and, you know.
And how we talk about sometimes being so open-spectrumed means, like, it sometimes maybe looks like you don't care, because you're just like, just be you.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
I don't know actually what you were born as, Kristen. I'm assuming the way that you walk in here that you are born a female, but I don't know that.
Right.
And why assume those things? Just accept you. You know?
Right.
You're
and
sitting here.
At the end of the day, like, why does it matter
why
to
does it
you?
Matter?
Right.
Like,
at all.
But yeah, so we were just, we got into a lot of that conversation and having that. Being able to have an open conversation where somebody was open to the dialogue of being like, then teach me so that I know why I should use these things.
In the same
because
regard
in his world, it just wasn't real, you know? And I'm just like, well, of course it's not real. You're a privileged white man, you know? I mean, you have, yes, you're gay, and yes, that is a thing. But, you know, there are so many white gay men who utilize that as like the but me too, you know, kind of thing, and it's just like,
but I'm gay, that's my thing.
Right.
You know, like, I get persecuted against because I'm gay, and you're like, but I'm...
I almost wanted to make a comment, but...
But you can't, because what we learned from that is at the end, the gentleman felt not woke, not more enlightened, but just respected that he was able to have a conversation, and in his regard, almost sounds stupid, so he could continue. He was just like, you're not going to attack me right away. I'm going to ask you some what sounds like really stupid questions, but it's because I need to get past that first veil
of
dumb questions. While the other person was essentially speaking about how they're tired of teaching. You know, at what point, am I just always the teacher, and you just need to stop kind of sucking? You know, like, so we just had this really awesome conversation, which the whole reason why I brought that up was because I feel as if people don't necessarily know how much shit you get sometimes, you know, for being a woman or for not being white or whatever, because they just assume that you aren't talking about it all the time.
Right.
But I'm assuming that probably you carry it with you all the time, and it happens maybe to you daily, you know, like, And we sort of, tangents all over the place. Like, I went to this Pride breakfast at UMKC earlier this year, and they talked about that it's okay to start to talk about the positive things that happen sure. to, like, gay people. But I don't know if we're that way, that place yet with, right. with, you know, people of color, you know, and all of those things. So I'm like, so we're kind of in this weird place where I may be a gay man, but that is, we're not talking about the same pie. I might be able to walk through life and no one ever know anything about, you know, what they could discriminate me against. Mm-hmm. But you walk into a room and you are a woman mm-hmm. who is, you know, with brown skin. People are already making judgments of you mm-hmm. that they are never going to make about me. Mm-hmm. So, like, how do you balance that? How do you walk through life knowing that you've got to hold on to that and not kind of lose your fucking mind all time? Because yeah. it might seem easy to be aggravated and lose your mind, but I've never really seen you lose your mind. You still just approach things as sweetly and intelligently.
Power of social media.
but I also hear, you know, you're a name in our community as well. You know, I was just talking to Jessica Alcorn about you yesterday, you know, and just mm-hmm. like these ideas, because I've been telling everybody who would listen that I was going to have you on the couch because I was so excited. I was like, how is there this person who I talk to and interact with all the time that I have no idea anything about you. I don't know if you have brothers or sisters. I don't know if you have kids. I don't know if you have parents. You know, like, I don't know anything about you, but I do know that I've watched you up on stage and interact in public. So the show is doing what it's supposed to do today. I'm learning about you. But I also want to ask you, without you having to teach, you know, what is it like to be Kristen Alturo and have to be a Latina woman in 2019 living in Missouri, you know? I mean, like, what is that like? Like, just being you.
I would say it's fairly normal. My ethnicity, which surprisingly, I have no race. Okay, let's just talk about that. If you take like the census, or if you even apply for a job, it's like, asks you your ethnicity, and it's got, you know, the few boxes that I always check, Hispanic or Latino, and I'm like, thank you for, you know, separating those two, which a lot of people don't do, by the way, but then it's like, and then now asks your race, and it's like, black, white, and then what's the other one, like, Pacific Islander or something, and then there's just a box that says other, and I'm like, who am I, like,
right.
And I think that that's just the... That's just generally how I feel, especially when it comes to as a Latina woman in 2019 in the theater community, you know, just like, who am I? I don't necessarily fit in this one group. I don't necessarily fit in this other group. I'm kind of in this middle place and nobody ever really knows where to put me. So I'm just going to create my own path until somebody's like, hey, we want you specifically for this, you know, I'm very aware of my ethnicity all the time. It's a mix of like being prideful, but then it's also a mix of just like, I need to be very hyper aware of my surroundings, especially in the social and political climate of today. And especially since, you know, all of the ICE situation and the border patrol, all that, like, I'm very hyper aware of the fact that my skin is brown. And I wear it as a badge of honor. I mean, it's not the only thing that defines me and identifies me, but it's a really cool thing that does. There's a lot that comes with it, a lot of, like, traditions and a lot of, like, languages and a lot of things that just I wear with pride, and it's scary. Mm-hmm. And it's also really cool to be around people who want to learn, like, you know, there are two different types of people. There are people who speak just out of ignorance and ask questions not to, like, learn anything, but they just want to stir the pot and get you upset. And that's another thing. I do remain calm and cool on Facebook, but it's another thing where I'm like, I have to be hyper aware of how I respond because, you know, being a Latina from the Bronx, like, people expect a certain attitude from me. People expect me to be hot-headed and angry and to respond just out of passion, but not with any facts to back it up. So I work extra hard to make sure people know that I know what I'm talking about, and that I'm a well-spoken, eloquent Latina. So
I think you're a well-spoken person. person.
Thank you.
Yeah, but yes.
But then there's the people who genuinely just want to know and will ask some stupid question. Mm-hmm. But they genuinely are curious. And I don't get tired of teaching people about it. Like, teaching those kind of people about it. People who just want to pick a fight and argue. My dad always told me to, like, pick and choose your battles, you know? Like, don't waste my breath on stupid people or ignorant people because, you know, there's no time for it.
Yep.
I could be teaching somebody else who actually wants to learn.
Exactly.
I wish I had more of that. Well, because I want to talk to them. I'm the person keeps talking to them, and I keep trying to figure them out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but everyone has their own approach. That's just,
right.
That's what I'm
saying. Well, and like, I get that, because I used to do the same thing. I'm so into learning how people operate and learning why they do certain things. Like, mm-hmm. It's my jam. That's why I love, okay, I'm going to say this, but not, please, nobody think I'm weird. Serial killers, come on. They're so fascinating. Their minds.
Methodical.
I'm just like, you're not doing this.
Right.
Just out of nowhere. Like, there's something in your mind that's wiring you to make these decisions. Mm-hmm. And I want to figure out why. So, like, that's why I love talking to people, because I want to figure out why you're asking these questions or why you do the things.
Well, I think that's the common denominator. The common denominator is a wanting to know.
It's a curiosity.
Yeah, I think everyone is curious. Even the shyest, most introverted person is still curious, but people don't know how to ask the questions, whether that is because mm-hmm. they themselves don't feel like they have the right words, they don't want to sound stupid. You know, I feel like there's a lot of people who don't want to even start that conversation about anything because
right.
they're worried that they're going to be attacked or that they're going to
right.
sound stupid.
I think that it's people don't, they want to be able to control the answer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think that everybody has a little bit of that,
mm-hmm.
but it's the, like, are you going to assume things because I've asked this question when maybe I genuinely want to know and I don't have the proper terminology or words or, you know, way to express what it is I'm trying, the answer I need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what sets people off. You know, I mean, I think that the reason that conversation went so well with those two particular people is because we knew we were in a safe space and that I wasn't just going to be like, and now you're a Klansman if you say, you know, or like, what I like, because that's the, I mean,
but I think
we've
taught
yeah.
quickly on social media.
Yeah. I mean, we've
yeah.
been taught that,
yes.
that racism is not a spectrum, that it's either you're, you know, a crazy
you're wearing the hood
torch, you
or
know,
you're
torch
not.
Wielding
right,
white
yeah.
supremacist or you're not. And that there's no in between. There are no
mm-hmm.
microaggressions. There are no, well, here are the nuances of the things
mm-hmm.
that we've been taught. But the problem
and what you talk about
with,
often is that there's racism all over.
All over.
Like,
it's exactly.
To say that you're not racist is pretty ignorant.
Right.
Because you don't even know the things that are embedded in you.
Yeah,
you
everyone draws
know.
Their own assumptions.
Exactly.
Everyone
yes.
creates their own stereotypes.
And it's so bad that even black people have those microaggressions. Like, that, you know, there are, within the community that you've got colorism and you've got all of these things
yes.
that's just like,
well,
we've
that's
all
what,
been trained
that's what
that
Afghani girls talked about is
yeah.
now you look at them all and they're all black. Now
mm-hmm.
you're not even talking about the racism and
right.
stuff that takes
right.
place
yeah.
inside
mm-hmm.
of the colorism like
right.
you talk about. And that was you know, why that play was so amazing
right.
because people got to hear black people be racist against themselves
mm-hmm.
in some ways.
Well, and have just this spectrum of just like admitting that, of me just, I can go into a conversation about race and know that it's never going to be an attack because I can just go in knowing I am inherently racist because that's what I've been raised in. I'm working my best every day at trying to
uh-huh.
stop those things,
yeah.
but it's just with it. And that's why it's not your job to teach me or Bree's job to teach me. I'm the one who's responsible for creating those systems.
Uh-huh.
And so it's my job to be like, well,
yes.
this is how you tear it down because this is who built it up, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just this crazy. But too many people aren't willing to admit those kinds of faults.
No.
That's not innately who we are as humans. Now, forget, you know, race or anything else. People aren't all
mm-hmm.
for being like, and this is where I'm flawed. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's, I am. I admit.
But
I'm
now we
bad
spend
bad
a lot
day,
of time, you know, and then I think people are getting lost in, like, the retrospect of it all, too,
mm-hmm.
of being like, well, what was racist 5 years ago? or, you know, that we were, or that wasn't racist 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
That is racist now, and then people are going back and trying to relearn
through
photos.
They're like, well, what about this? Like, why did nobody raise the problem this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that was literally a question, and, you know, and this could be one of those moments that you push
away. Yeah.
But people are like, why didn't Kristen Bell Turturro speak up before? You know?
Yeah.
Like, and the that sort of question, or, you know, why, it's just, it's insane that then people are like, well, maybe speaking up now isn't enough. And you're just like, well, I didn't speak up then, you know? And it's, mm-hmm. this is a gross comparison, but it's a little bit like sexual abuse. Like, don't blame the person that didn't speak up 3 years ago. They
right.
didn't...
Yeah, that didn't make it not abuse. That it just not, meant that it
yeah, it just meant that they couldn't talk about it 3 years
yeah.
ago.
And a lot of... I've heard that question, actually, of, like, why didn't you speak up when this was happening? Well, because, actually, at that time, as, and I get it a lot from white people, and I'm like, you don't understand how scary it is to try to speak up against a lot of white people
yeah.
who have control over whether you get cast in things or not, or whether you are actually a part of this community anymore. It is very terrifying. It was a lot of me as a young actor, you know, deciding, do I actually want to say this and speak up, or should I just, like, be quiet and alone? You know, and also there was a time, because I look back and I look at some things that I did that were pretty problematic too. Like, I got called back for Aida at Theater in the Park. I am not a Nubian princess. Mm. No. Did I want that role? Yeah. But at that time, I was so ignorant and self-involved that I failed to look outside of myself and look at the bigger picture of it all and look at, you know, these beautiful black women in this room that I could be potentially taking this role from, that this could be something so big for them to speak about and to portray, and here I am just only wanting it because I can sing the part. Mm-hmm. So,
do you think that happened at MTH?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Yeah.
But I mean, I will take ownership of my problematic behavior in the past and say, like, but I wised up and then I realized that it's the payoff is greater to be loud than to be quiet. So,
well, and you 10 years ago needs Kristen today to speak
yeah,
up.
Exactly.
You know, and that's sort of the responsibility of the elder, sort of, you know, mm-hmm. in a gross metaphor, is to say, that's why you do have to speak
yes.
up now. Because yes. you feel confident enough to say, well, if this affects my job or my life, who cares? It's that important to me. And
yeah.
whenever you're 15, 16, or whatever, you're like, no way!
Right.
I have
yeah.
to keep going. You're part of the system. You have to do it.
Yeah, you yeah. grow into the person you needed when you were younger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think everyone mm-hmm. has, on both sides of everything, I think everyone's just gotten louder in the last 2.5
yeah.
years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people who are emboldened and there are people who are resisting.
Yeah.
And that, you know,
and
we all had to get louder pretty quickly.
And the thing is, like,
yeah.
nobody's saying that those things in the past were okay. Like, we're
right.
saying now, we're like, yeah, no, it really wasn't okay. And the fact that we, you know, let that slide is a huge deal, which
yeah.
is why a lot of people are being brought to justice now for things that they've, you know, committed. I mean, R. Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
A damn mess.
A damn mess, but people still want to listen to his music.
People still listen to Chris Brown, too.
People still listen... I mean, it's crazy. But those are those conversations.
Right, right.
Like, it happens. It's not just race. It's just...
It's all over.
Yes. It is crazy. And once... It's almost like once you crack that lens, you can't unsee how it's everywhere, too. Like, I feel like there was just one day, really, where I woke up and I was just like, there's a lot fucked up with
yes.
us.
Yes, I was literally
lot.
Just thinking that
yeah.
when you said it. I was like, shit's fucked up.
Shit's
right.
fucked mm-hmm. up. But we gotta keep talking about it.
Right.
We have to keep saying, you
yeah.
know, and this is what I always say, it's my own devil's advocacy. Let's say the majority of the United States is racist and believes that only white people should exist. Then they should be honest, and that's what America will turn into. But if people are not
mm-hmm.
honest with what they believe and
right.
who they are, then we have no idea what we're talking about or trying to protect or
mm-hmm.
whatever. So, you know, it's my thing with Donald Trump. If 100% of the United States would have voted and he would have won, I wouldn't have been pissed, because I would have been like,
well, that's the majority spoke.
Yeah, right.
That's what we wanted
exactly.
as a nation. But the fact that not enough people vote, you know, and then there's this electoral college, whatever. I was just like, that's not real. That's not the right representation
mm-hmm.
of what America is. And so now they're very loud. And I'm glad I know who the racists are or the
Oh, yeah.
The misogynist or whatever, because that's who I know to either talk to or avoid on the street.
It makes you sad, you know, when you realize who those people are. Like, people, you know, when people show you their true colors, just let them.
But show me you're crazy, because then I can deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or not.
Or not.
Or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that you're doing hair. I know that's kind of a weird thing.
Oh,
but
no, I love...
Hair changed my life.
Changed my life. I did it 2014 with Phil Keenan and Chris Holbrook. Mm-hmm. Rest in peace. But it changed my entire life. That was like the year where I started kind of coming into myself. So, because I did hair and my parents did not enjoy that at all. Mm-hmm. My dad was like, I'm not coming to the show. My parents are super supportive.
Was that the one at the bar?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, did hair. It changed my life. It changed the way I just, like, started looking at things in a bigger way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm so grateful that I'm getting to do it again. Like, in a different part of my life now. Like, mm-hmm. a different chapter. So, oh, I'm so
It's excited. Why I know her. It's why I know my husband. Is
oh, really?
Is because of school. Yes.
See hair.
And that's in 2009. At the JOB, at the Just Stop.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. We open on September 7th, random plug.
You can plug it.
Yes.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, people should go see hair. I have seen really shitty versions of hair, too.
Oh God.
I'm excited to see it in that space.
Me too.
Because it's...
I think that's a great space to be immersive in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen hair in a lot of different iterations. 6 or 7 times. And the worst production I've ever seen was the national tour.
Yep.
because I was
boring.
I don't want.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where you're just like, I need that intimacy.
You need
like,
that rawness.
In my face with flowers and, you know, like.
But yet I saw that same tour flip it a year ago or a year afterward in Chicago, and they had moved some people around and replaced people, and it was. It was lovely.
I'm sure it was lovely, but I don't ever want to see her in that size theater. Mm-hmm. Like in this, you know, in a national
it
touring
needs to
stage.
Be more
you've got to have that kind of intimacy.
Nick has just some really awesome ideas about hair, and it changed his life too when he first did it. And so his ideas are awesome, and the way he's going to present it to everyone is going to be a really beautiful storytelling moment. And I think the immersive part is going to be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to help desensitize people, you know, for...
And it's crazy what you're talking about in that musical that people think is
not
topical.
Right,
and
it's so relevant.
So topical.
It's so relevant. I think... So when I got called back for the show, at the callbacks, and Nick was telling everybody how the casting would work and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, can I just make one statement? Because I will never shut up. I was like... This show is so much more relevant now than you think it is. And it goes beyond the nudity. I know that a big selling point for people is the nudity.
It's
but
5 seconds at the end of Act 1.
5 seconds. And the crazy part is that, you know, when people get so wrapped up in like, oh my gosh, my body's going to be out, people are going to see it, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, first of all, it's crazy that society has fucked you up so much to where you can't see what the context of something is. The moment you see that you have to be nude, you're going to think of like all the most body shaming things about yourself. And I hate that.
I just did that musical, The Full Monty. Let me tell you, all of those men being so paranoid about their bodies
and
is crazy.
Right. And then you're just like, I want everybody to like understand the context of what's happening there and how it mirrors what's happening today. And that hippies were more than just ganja smoking, like...
Well, but where are the hippies now? Like, isn't that weird to think about
Modern day. I call myself the modern day Latina hippie.
Yeah.
That's my little...
Patent pending. But, like, just because we believe in love and, like, universal sort of idea of just caring about the human next to you, somehow
that makes
like,
you a
liberal
snowflake
and hippies. Yeah,
hippie,
and
right.
like,
or whatever.
Human decency is what makes me weak.
Right.
I don't think so.
Right.
But
wow, then I am super weak.
Then I am so weak. I'm broken. You know, as you're wearing a Love is Love shirt, we're dealing with literally the third shooting that we've heard about,
in
72 hours. You know, because we had one here in Kansas City and then two national ones.
Yeah, so. Three national ones, because the Garlic Festival, then you had the one in...
Garlic Festival was before, and
El Paso, and now Ohio.
I literally just proved the headline that I wrote this read this morning that said, no one's talking about El Paso because there's a new one. I had totally forgotten about, you know, the Garlic Festival that literally took place.
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about it could be, like, a connection, because all of them have been... driven by, like, white supremacy.
Right. So. Well, and specifically in targeted areas.
Yeah.
The Garlic Festival, I think, was the only one that was a little bit more mixed race, but that specifically the Walmart shooting in El Paso was directed completely at the border, and that the club that Ohio took place in was a, you know, traditionally black club. It's, yeah.
America.
America.
But I still want to be here. If you're fighting for it.
Yeah.
That's why
we're here. Yeah.
That's why I'm so loud.
Yeah.
Because well, I have to be its biggest critic.
Uh-huh.
Well, I have to be. It's my home. Mm-hmm. If I don't clean my house, I need to be the first to be like, my house is dirty. I'm sorry, you can't come over today. Right. You know, like...
I gotta
clean, you know? So, I mean, if we're here, like, we gotta be like, everyone needs to pick up a rag and start cleaning it up. Mm-hmm. Rich, poor, black, white, all of you. We need them all. Because if we're not careful, we're gonna lose it. And I'm not in the mood to lose it. We gotta keep fighting.
What are you talking about, Corey? All we need are thoughts and prayers.
Right.
Thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts, prayers, and a red cap.
That's it.
Yep.
That's it. That's gonna easily...
Your thoughts and prayers. What is it? Your tears can now make bullets or something? Because people are crying so much that...
I mean, it's... Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's pretty good. Isn't that fun to wake up to? You know, and then in that same regard, I'm like, well, I get to go talk about magical things with people today. Yeah, it's the idea that, you know, someone... People are dying, you know, in horrible shootings, but yet we still have to keep going. And I think it's that idea of keep going that sometimes makes it seem like we're not paying attention to it all. It's just so hard to... It's all the same problem still. Yeah. Like, all of these things are still gun control, no matter how many places you put it at. We have to control the fact that those things are happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, though. I mean, like, because other places have guns and gun control, but other places aren't as sick as we are.
Other places.
Like, that, you know what I mean? Like, there are guns readily available in almost every other country.
Right.
And we are the only one that have this problem. So as much as, yes, we should be addressing gun control, we should be addressing it because of it's a symptom of something much larger.
Well, yeah, we don't deserve that freedom. People can't handle it.
I mean, it's just, you know,
people are sick. It's, you're right.
Yeah. White men specifically. But yeah.
Yes, that is correct.
I mean, it's what we do to our little boys and tell them that it's, you know, somehow they're emasculated if they have feelings, if they have, you know, I mean, it's,
right.
There's so many layers. Yeah. To what is wrong. But I have yet to be proven in a situation where, like, you want to, you know, be xenophobic and say that you're terrified of Muslim terrorists, but we are at war within the country in a way that is so, that people are unwilling to say white men are the problem. But I have not been proven wrong yet.
They've been a problem in my life for years.
It's... It's terrifying.
Well, I think
you see
just...
how I just stay quiet.
I think it's just nobody ever wants themselves to be the problem. It has to be somebody else. We take a lot of fault and not we don't take a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. We should take responsibility.
We should, but we don't want to because then it'll prove that we're dumb. Mm-hmm. Like, it's bizarre. We don't. I'm telling you, universal background checks stop people with domestic violence past from buying a gun. Manage gun storage. Like, can we just
close that loophole? Just a year ago where someone was able to do a 3D printing of one, right?
Yes.
What?
They were going to be able to purchase the plans or whatever to print 3D guns. Okay. And
it's like, it's like teenagers and like children. It's like you take it away from them, you say, no, you can't. Just find a way to do
then
it.
Then they created...
They created their own. Yes.
Yeah, the patent or whatever to do that was...
Well, then the why?
But, like, yeah, why?
Well, just why? Why is that... Why has that become the solution? Is it the instant gratification that this country has become used to? The, like, the fast food, the, you know, the social media, all of the things that you're just like, just sit down and admit that when you want to have a gun, it's to shoot another human being. Mm-hmm. Whether that human being is trespassing on your land or whether, stop with that. Like, you want to fucking hunt, whatever. I don't give a shit. You want to hunt. Like, it's, you should use a bow and arrow and make it an actual sport, but whatever. you know, but like, but what, you own a handgun. What you want to do with that handgun is shoot another person. There, mm-hmm. it serves no other purpose. Mm-hmm. That, that's why do we have to have an AR-15 that can shoot? I mean, the Dayton, Ohio thing, they had under control in less than 1 minute. The shooter was dead, but 9 people still lost their lives.
Yep. 26 injured. Huh?
26. 26 injured and 9 people in 1 60-second span.
Yes.
There's no reason for that. No. That does not need to exist in our world. Mm. But somehow, the instant gratification that we've become used to is the justification.
The tweet said, you know, that no amount of gun protection that woman would have had on Friday would have stopped her from getting shot. It doesn't matter if she had
she got shot.
It doesn't matter if it was a good person or a bad person. Mm-hmm. That woman died because of someone being careless with her
food
tool.
Truck in
what was her
district.
Name? Erin Langhoffer?
Langhoffer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah. I think that's another thing, too. I posted yesterday a song lyric from Kendrick Lamar about how everyone respects the shooter. Mm-hmm. And like, and in a way, and like, that's what mm-hmm. that's what we're gonna keep talking about is the person who shot them, mm-hmm. and like the person.
Then you shouldn't mention their name, and all you should do is mention the victim.
Yep, exactly. And right. we forget about the people who lost their lives just by being there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when that shooter hit that Republican softball game, and literally people were like, "But that's God's tool. If I would have died, that's fine. Yeah. You know, I believe in God, and that's what. And if they came to shoot us." Maybe we deserved it. I mean, like, literally, those are people who believe in their own sword.
Listen, here,
as
I believe in God, too, but God didn't plan that.
Well, no God I know does that. or childhood cancer. But whatever, that's its own conversation.
But you know what? Let's look at things through a child's eyes for the remaining few minutes.
That's right.
Well,
that's
talk
right.
about
some well, we, yeah, but that, but those are... Just to sort of wrap up that serious part of it, because we have to keep talking about that. And we have to keep engaging, and we cannot become numb to what is happening around us. Even if all I want to do is live in a Magic Kingdom Disney world, that does not... And eat tacos, maybe singing ones, if we can figure them out.
Come full circle.
But there is a, you know, there's probably a psychology to the fact that I keep going back to Disney World because the real world is so goddamn scary sometimes.
Yeah.
And inside of those walls, I'm not dealing with those things.
Yeah.
There is none of that. You know, I actually get to go to Disney World, and we're going to see it when we go to Disney in October. I'm going to see it when I go there in August. Shameless plugs. I get to keep going to Disney World. Obviously, that it really is a small world after all. To be cliche, everyone who's walking around there, no one is hating each other. Everyone is there for the same damn reason to see Mickey Mouse. And can't we all just like remember that it's okay to like love the person next to you and just go get a pretzel and share? Like it's what I love about amusement parks and those sorts of things is it brings in everyone from all over with a common denominator. Of just like numbing out and having a good time, and some I don't know, I'm an advocate for that escapism, I guess.
Yeah, me
but
too.
That is okay to have a good time, so you can almost recharge to become a warrior when you get back.
Yeah,
And
out of those doors.
I love that you said you can do both. Like people, the thing that people were so upset about during the whole MTH thing, they were like, this is really exhausting. And I just hope that, like, we can just all love each other and see that this is a good story. But I'm like, that's great that you think that and you live in this bubble where things don't affect you. And that you can walk away from, you know, this time and be completely unscathed and nothing bother you.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's not real. That's not how things work here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can get to that moment where we're joyful and singing Kumbaya and, like, holding hands.
We've got a long way to go, though.
But we have, yes, we have a long way to go, and it's going to take a lot of education. It's going to take a lot of fighting. It's going to take a lot of people willing to listen.
And it's going
to
take these gross situations, too, from time to time. We can't push them under a rug, either. We've got to talk
about. They are thrown in our face to talk about. Like, not to say, thoughts and prayers, okay, let's go get dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like,
Or that. I mean, the complacency of so many people to just say, but can't we just, but can't we just, is that, they are the actual problem. I can deal with a torch-wielding racist any day, because at least they're standing for something. It's the, at the end of the day, and I've said this in lots of iterations of lots of different conversations, I am a cisgendered white woman who is educated, whose children go to school, who has insurance and a job, and Trump being president hasn't affected me in my day-to-day life at all. But I have this crazy notion that giving a shit about other human beings is something I should do. So then I need to do it. Like, and that's not a, but can't we just get along? That's actively working towards people who have been affected every day. Because that's what you're supposed to do as a human being. Like, you're supposed to give a shit about other people.
I don't want to get along with everyone. I want to respect everyone, though.
Right, right.
I don't want to. Right. That is actually not my goal.
I want everyone to be able to be safe and loved and happy. And that doesn't mean it always has to be
from me.
Yeah, right. I don't, you know. But that has to be an activity. That cannot just be sitting back and saying that's how it should be.
Right.
It has to be an active motion.
Right, because you're like this.
It's an action.
You want
it's,
people to practice what they preach? That's
strange.
But it's not, I mean, that. It's just, it's beyond me that there are so many people who just want to sit back and it'll work itself out. And
let other people deal with it.
Yeah. You have to keep fighting because it's your battle.
Right.
But, well, I don't care if it's your battle. It's my battle too.
It's my battle too. Right.
You know, because if my brothers and sisters are being murdered for who they are, it's my job to help.
And I think a lot of white people forget that they do play a part, and a lot of people are more apt to listen to you because you are white. So can you do me a favor and, like, help me out? I'm not asking you to be my savior. I'm not asking you to be my white savior or whatever. But I'm asking you, as my brother and sister, like, can you help spread this message or help make a change? Because I know people are going to be more ready to listen to you.
How do you define that line of being helpful and not being a white savior?
Oh, my gosh. I got that question 4 times in the same day, 2 weeks ago.
So you have a practice response.
Yes, I do. I'm like,
yeah, screwed up.
So that's a really good question, because I know a lot of people want to help and they have really good intentions, and that's where it all is. That's where the answer comes from. Mm-hmm. What are your intentions? Are your intentions to make yourself seem more noble? Are you doing this so that way you can get a pat on the back and say, I'm not a racist, I made a status.
I have black
friends. Exactly. Yeah. So, like, and also, are you providing credit to where credit is due? I know a lot of people would have, like, taken my statuses or, like, taken the things that I said and been like, these are how I felt. You know, like, taking what I said and my actual feelings and my struggle and creating it their own so that way they can feel some sort of oppression, air quotes. And their intentions are not good. Their intentions are solely for themselves and to make themselves feel good. They're the ones with the kids in Haiti in their profile picture. You know what I mean? Instead of the people who are being very active and trying to learn more and asking real questions and, you know, owning the fact that they're like, I am a white male or female. I know people are going to listen to me, and what my friends are saying here is that they're hurting. And, you know, bringing us into that conversation too and not just making it their own. That's like the intention is what's going to define somebody who's actually trying to help and what they call a white
savior. So would you want someone to sort of take, like, your status and sort of share it, but then put their own words in front of it, you know, just to say, my friend Kristen said this.
For example, Jake Walker, like, he shared something that I said about being a Puerto Rican woman, right? And about being Puerto Rican in general, our place in the military, what we've done for the U.S. government, you know, since we became a U.S. territory, and plenty of other things. But he shared it, and he was like, this is from my friend Kristen El Toro. And that's not for me saying, like, I want credit for people. I want to be patted on the back. It's just saying, like, these aren't my... I'm not taking my words. I'm not taking somebody else's words.
He was just saying, you should hear these words.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just it. I mean, it could even be like, these are from a friend of mine who is a Puerto Rican in the United States, and these are the things that she wants to raise awareness to. That's it.
Well, how did you get to Kansas City, Missouri in 2019? Like, what's your life path that you to get here?
Okay, like starting from where I was born. Uh-huh. So I was born in the Bronx, and predominantly Latino and Black community. My family is 100% Puerto Rican. My mom is from Puerto Rico, so she immigrated here when she was 18. And my father was born, I think he was born in Brooklyn, I'm pretty sure. But we picked up and moved to Kansas when I was 9 years old. Huge culture shock for me. I think it's so funny because people talk about moving to New York and they're like, oh, it's a huge culture shock. I'm like, really? That is like real comfortable to me.
That's my home. Right.
And I came here and I was the only minority in my class at the time. So I didn't really have a lot of friends. I knew one girl, her name was Emily. I don't know her now, so you're fine. But she actually had told me later when we became friends in high school, she was like, you know, when I first met you, I was terrified of you because she was like, my parents never really like prepared me to meet somebody who looked different. And I was like, that's so crazy that as a kid, you know, you are taught to think that way, or you're not even taught at all anything.
You just looked different.
Right. Where I was like, I grew up in this like melting pot of people where it didn't matter what you looked like. We all looked so different that I was like, this is normal. Everybody looks different and everybody can live together in like harmony and peace. And I'm so grateful for growing up in that, because then when I moved here, it was the first time I was like presented with, oh, I am different. And then I've been here ever since. I mean, I lived in Casey. I lived really close to here a couple years ago with Guy. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm here.
Now you're here. Yeah, that's awesome. Now we get to go into the questions part of the interview. It's the actor's thing. And we have about 10 minutes. So here we
go. Okay, cool.
Yeah, all right. So what is your definition of real magic?
Of real magic. Mm-hmm. I've never been I had to think about that. Real magic for me is, I'm gonna give the dumbest answer, I feel like.
Nope.
Honestly, real magic for me is watching people speak on things that they love and something that they're passionate about, even if to them it seems so small and so trivial. I get to watch people essentially become a kid again. And it's beautiful. Like, they completely transform in my eyes because I see their excitement in their eyes. I see the happiness that they feel. And that's not something that pure, genuine happiness, people feel that a lot. Don't feel that as much lately. So that's so magical to me to watch that transformation from, like, the real world to, like, just pure joy and pure innocence. And it's like, ah, they're a kid again. I love that.
Dig that.
Yeah. You are a new addition to the crayon box. What color are you and why?
I've actually thought about this one. Butter pecan.
Okay. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A, because I love that flavor of ice cream. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's kind of my color.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I get that. That's so cool.
Because I'm not like...
That's a good one.
I'm not like as deep or like as olive undertone as maybe like caramel is. Mm-hmm. But like... I got that little pecan crunch.
That's mm-hmm. awesome. What was something that you were told you could never do or do well that you have accomplished or in the process of accomplishing?
Speak publicly. Yeah. My sisters are so freakishly smart, and they are so well-spoken. They're these powerhouses. They're these forces of nature that I've always looked up to. I have four older sisters. And everybody has always been like, oh my gosh, are you just like your sisters? Like, will you ever measure up to like them and, you know, how powerful they are? And I've always kept quiet. And like, I did that to myself too. I was like, I'm just gonna, cause I'm not like them. No, there's no way I'm like that smart. And there's no way people are gonna listen to the things I have to say. And I was the person that was telling myself I couldn't do it. So, and we know now that is
that
not
she
true.
Is not scared.
She is not quiet.
Yeah. Well, be louder. That's all I'll say.
That's funny. All right. Okay. You are invisible for 24 hours. What do you do with your time? and you can just, like, arrive at whatever destination you need
suffering
to be
my
at.
Suffering my anxiety a little. I'm just kidding. I can do whatever. Invisible for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. Katie Gilchrist said she'd go stand in a Sporting Casey's locker room.
Locker room. Just
She's still my favorite answer.
I would appear in a recording studio with Beyonce.
God. Have you ever seen her live?
Yes, I have. Front row center.
Oh, man. I had to choose between literally seeing Beyonce live one night or going on a 4-day Colorado vacation. And I was like, I'll go to Colorado for 4 days. But next time, I'm going to go see Beyonce.
I would love to witness that. She's, I think people wash over the fact that she's such a good singer. She like, is. Aside from everything else, tear down everything else.
She's such a good singer.
And that's why I picked a recording booth, because, like, I mean, she's going to show up and just, like, her real self and just raw Beyonce. Like, you know.
Raw Beyonce.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my dream.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
My dad always said to, he said, you can always look back at your past, just don't get caught staring. And that's the biggest thing. It's actually been on my mind a lot lately. I just wrote a song about it yesterday. But because I get so caught up in, if I hadn't have done this, that wouldn't have happened. Or I get caught up in that. And it's either it makes you feel happy that that happened or sad that that happened. But that bit of advice that my dad gave me was like, you can't change it. You know, you got it. It already happened. And this is where you're at right now. So what are you going to do right now?
That's similar to mine. That's awesome. Yeah. After 24 hours, it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yep.
It's a new day.
Yes.
That's why I tattooed it to my back. Uh-huh. Last question, Miss Perry.
All right. What problem or situation did TV or movies make you think would be a much bigger deal in real life?
And the gamut of answers to this has
right.
been fun.
Right.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
A problem or... I can think of, like, opposite answers.
Like what?
In movies, they made it seem like breakups are, they fly by, and, like, all you need is, like, chocolate and your good friends, and they're like, oh, and then instantly you meet the love of your life. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, after my first breakup, we're gonna be good, we're gonna be Gucci, we're gonna go out, we're gonna have some girl time, and then my boo is gonna be there.
Just shows up, right.
And he's gonna look like Liam Hemsworth.
And well, you kind of got that, I guess.
I did! Even better! And it's really not like that. It's actually really ugly, and it's really heartbreaking. You actually feel your heart breaking. Mm-hmm. A lot of anxiety, and you're like, this is not the rom-com I asked for. No.
I think that heartbreaking is you, like, starting over, you know?
Yeah.
Relearning yourself.
Oh, man.
Breaking up is hard to do. Someone should write a song with that title.
Man.
I think someone did. So that was our hour, friend.
Ooh, they had fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we always sort of end with two questions. Second to last one is, is there anything that we didn't talk about or anything that you wanted to say that you were not given the opportunity to that you would like to say?
Yes, really quickly, actually. Because it's been on the forefront of my brain and I've been writing a lot about it. I'm huge on relationship health, and I'm big on people making the choices to love one another when you are choosing your partner. And there's no such thing as, like, fate or destiny in my mind. In my mind, it's just my personal opinion, that love and a partnership is an actual choice you make every day to love that one person. And true love does exist. That cliche love that we all see, it can happen and it is real. It also just comes with a lot of real work. But you just have to be willing to put that work in and make the choices to, like, have that fun cliche love. Mm-hmm. That it just doesn't disappear. So I just want people to keep fighting and to keep promoting good, real love. That's what I wanted to say. I don't know why I wanted to say that.
I love love.
I do love too, and you know.
I always tell Matt he's just the one that I wanted to put up with the most. That's just it. I was like, I will be willing to deal with all of you.
You make that choice, and it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of patience and a lot of grace and a lot of, like, ownership too of your part. Mm-hmm. Allow your partner to love you in, of course, the way you want to be loved, but let them do it in a
Let them love you too.
Yeah, yeah, let them be themselves.
Mm-hmm. If they don't like to bring flowers, they're never going to bring you flowers, probably. Stop making them bring you flowers.
Stop making them bring you flowers.
I mean, because that's not their love language.
I also don't like flowers. I really don't.
Never bring Kristen flowers.
Don't bring Kristen flowers. You know what would bring her on opening out of hair, right? All the flowers. Roses.
Every boyfriend I've had, I'm like, please do not give me flowers. Like, if you give me anything as a surprise, please let it be a pizza. Please. I have socks on right now that say all you need is pizza because I love pizza so much.
Do you love pizza the way I love tacos?
Yes, I love pizza.
I understand your, like, love for that. And then the last question is, who would you like to hear from on the couch? Who should we have on that would make you listen and maybe our listeners would learn a little bit about?
I say this completely unbiased. Mm-hmm. But Christoph Nevins. Mm-hmm. And I say that because, and without going into a lot of depth about it, he has such a way with his words. He's such a smart individual, and that's part of the reason why I fell in love with him. But he speaks so eloquently, and he has this vast knowledge of, A, the most random things, but also the things that really matter. And he cares so much about people, and he's also a person that has gone through a lot of growth and a lot of like self-development, and I'm emotional, but he's just grown so much in the last like 2 years, and I'm so proud of him, and I just think it's something that people haven't given him a chance to explain. But yeah, I think that he would be a great
to talk to Christoph. Yeah, he is someone who I've wanted to sit on the couch for sure.
Yeah.
Yes, I make everyone cry. Another winner! We got another one. Thank you, Kristen, for being on the show.
Thank you.
This episode will air on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And then the following week, as I said, I'll be in Disneyland.
That's
last
true.
Plug.
He's leaving me for my 40th birthday, which is a week from tomorrow. But we will have on Chris Barksdale.
Yeah, so we will have on Chris Barksdale.
Oh, I love him. He probably does not remember me.
Talking about Jesus Christ Superstar. Mm-hmm. Talking about Ham Bingo, which we have at Hamburger Mary's on August 21st.
Which is fun.
And that night is benefiting the Arts Asylum and Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yes.
And then the week that we get back, we will be pretty much starting rehearsals for Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yes.
So that will be
an all-star cast. Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's crazy. I can't wait to get started just so we can get some of this shit out of our heads, you know, and up on stage. Because you just talk about it.
Yes. We haven't been in it for a while.
All the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you for being on the show.
Love you all.
And we'll see you next week.
And thanks for my bagel.
Yes. Love your bagels. Okay. Bye.
And that was this week's episode of Couch Chats. Thanks so much for listening. Couch Chats is available locally on KOJH 104.7 and also on iTunes. Remember, that's Couch with a K. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this episode are solely those of Couch Chats, not the Arts Asylum, KOJH, or Mutual Musicians Foundation. Thanks again for listening, and please remember to rate, review, and subscribe, as well as follow us on Instagram. Tune in next week to see who we have on the couch.